Hey, this is Malcolm Brogdon, and this is the Sideline Guys Podcast.
Hi, Pacers fans, and welcome in to another Sideline Guys Wednesday. Alongside Jeremiah Johnson, I'm Pat Boylan. A little bit later in the show, we're going to have a different type of guest, Kid Quill, who's a musical artist, local from Indianapolis, and a diehard Pacers fan. Will join us a bit later, but now thrilled to be joined by Chris Carino, who's the longtime Brooklyn Nets radio play-by-play announcer, and the timing here is perfect, of course, as the Pacers are about a week into this trade, which, of course, has brought a lot of storylines around Caris LeVert, and certainly the storylines have been pretty significant over there, Chris, in Brooklyn. We were just talking off-air, though. It's kind of interesting in this COVID world how what might typically be a circus over there is not quite so much the case because of how the NBA is handling everything in the COVID environment.
There normally would be, dozens of TV cameras and microphones, staking out the Net locker room all around Kevin Durant and getting his comments every day about Kyrie Irving. And it's just not the case now. It's just, you have to get on a Zoom every once in a while. That locker room is sort of like a free space for these guys. And not that the Nets are, even in the New York area, the Nets are kind of the JV anyway when it comes to the media coverage. I mean, you'd still have, you saw what's going on with the Mets and their GM, and, the Jets are involved in trying to get Deshaun Watson and hiring a new head coach. So it's funny that the Nets are, I think, sometimes more of a national story right now because of Kyrie and Harden and KD than they are a New York story. But certainly the times have made it a little easier, I think, for these guys to handle it. It hasn't been as much of a circus as you might think.
You know, it's interesting, and we'll get into Caris LeVert and how this affects the Pacers in a moment. But this trade's fascinating from a lot of different angles. But first and foremost, you bring in a top 10 player in the NBA, and you've got probably from a 1-2-3 standpoint more talent than anybody in the league. There are potential question marks. We haven't seen, Kyrie Irving in a Nets uniform in over a week now. Any initial thoughts on the potential of the fit of all of this? Because the talent's undeniable.
The fit is the major question, and that'll be the biggest challenge for Steve Nash. He actually referred to it. He used the word challenge, and then the other night when he was asked about it, but then he changed his word and he said, not challenge isn't the word. It's a puzzle. It's a puzzle we've got to put together. Challenge implies that it's something difficult. Puzzle implies that you have these pieces and you just have to see how they fit. I think what you did notice the other night is with the talent level, and I've, seen this before. I mean, obviously we've seen James Harden over the years. We know what he can do. We know how he can play. But when you actually see him in the lineup with Kevin Durant and with the other pieces that the Nets had, boy, he looked so good. I mean, he had 14 assists his first night, and he could have had 20. Guys just weren't ready for, receiving the passes the way he would deliver them. So, without Kyrie Irving, they look really good. I mean, they went out and played Milwaukee. That game was like a playoff game. It had the intensity of a playoff game. It looked like maybe the two best teams in the East. And now you add Kyrie Irving to the mix. How is that going to affect things? What kind of Kyrie Irving are we going to see? Is he focused on the right things right now? And will he, the thing you heard a lot when Harden joined the team was when they asked Durant and they asked Harden about playing together, they talked about sacrifice. Is Kyrie Irving going to sacrifice in terms of his shots, of his usage, if he has to be taken out of a game in the last minute for a guy who's maybe a little more defensive minded? You need some stops late in the game, and you've got to take out Kyrie Irving and put in Bruce Brown. Is that something that is going to sit well with him? How is it going to affect the chemistry that right now, James Harden walked in, didn't even have a practice and played two games without a practice. And he's been sensational. So, and the chemistry was good. So how is Kyrie Irving going to affect that? I mean, these are certainly major questions, but he's such an incredible talent that when he is engaged and focused, they are going to be one of the more unguardable teams that you've seen in this league in a long time. Will they be able to stop people with the kind of defensive intensity that championship teams do? I don't know, but they'll be able to outscore you probably.
Chris, I don't think this trade was a surprise in that James Harden went to Brooklyn. I'm sure you maybe and those around the Nets had to think, okay, if this happens, certain players are going to be leaving town. And so Caris LeVert is one of those players. You also lost Jared Allen. I mean, there are some guys that meant a lot to the organization that are young players that are leaving. So what was the first thing you kind of felt and maybe your emotions when, okay, the team's going to change. James Harden is coming in. There is real championship potential, but you're saying goodbye to someone that's meant a lot to the organization in Caris LeVert.
You know, fans and myself included here, you love homegrown guys. You know, I think that was part of the appeal of, you know, in this area, the Yankees, all those years when they were winning championships with the core four, those were your guys. You know, they weren't the typical Yankee go out, sign the big free agent. It was guys that were homegrown and you saw them develop and they won a championship. The Harden rumors when they started divided Nets fans and I was one. I wasn't really sure what I wanted out of the situation for the Nets, because on one hand, you are getting one of the all-time great talents in James Harden. But on the other hand, you knew what they were going to have to give up. And we really were enamored by Caris LeVert and Jared Allen. I mean, two of my favorite Nets all time in 20 years to cover. I mean, just tremendous players, growing talent, and fantastic people, you know. So and you knew that you were going to have to give that up, plus all the first round draft picks and pick swaps. And when you say pick swap, there's a Pavlovian response in Net fans that automatically think of what they gave up to get to get Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. So they shudder, you know. And we can get into this is much different than that, but It was really the only hesitation was because of I think knowing that you're giving up Caris LeVert and Jared Allen and knowing that you may face those guys as all-stars again sometime down the road. I mean, right off the bat, the Nets, Jared Allen's first two games with the Cavaliers are going to be against the Nets. The Nets go there and play a two-game set. They've got to go against them twice. So, and in Indiana, you're getting a guy in LeVert that it's going to be hard. It's going to be really hard for Net fans to look at Caris LeVert in an Indiana Pacer jersey.
I think that, everyone in Indiana stopped their speculation about the lineup and the fit and everything on the court when they found out the news over the weekend. And I'm sure now that you probably heard some of the comments that he had to say yesterday, maybe it doesn't surprise you the way he is approaching this situation with so much positivity. And, it was a joy, I think, to hear the way he felt about everything in that Zoom chat that he had with the Indianapolis media yesterday, and maybe share a little bit about his personality that you know.
Oh, it's funny. A couple of years ago, it was actually in Indiana. I was in Indianapolis for the NCAA tournament for Westwood One, and we had Michigan, and John Beilein was the coach. And, you know, you get to meet with the coaches before the day before their first games. And I saw John Beilein, and one of the first things he said was, "How do you like Caris?" You know, like he knew that we would love the guy. He was a rookie at the time or second year player. And everybody you meet that's ever been involved with Caris in his career and in his college career, they all just have these glowing things to say about him. And he's a guy that's had to face a lot of hardship in his life. I mean, from his father passing away when he was 14 years old, you know, that what that was like for him coming downstairs and finding his father on a chair who had had a heart attack during the night. Like, that's a thing he has to overcome. You know, his mom's been ill. His mom has MS and he deals with that. He's had these incredible injuries. You know, at Michigan, he was hurt with the foot injury. He comes to Brooklyn. He has that, he's looking like an all-star, and he has that gruesome injury in Minnesota that costs him, you know, so much time, but he battles back from that. And then, you know, last year, again, going to take another step up, and he has another injury that costs him most of the season. But he just handles everything with grace and dignity, and he's kind to everyone. And then his talent level is, you're just seeing it get better and better and better. I mean, I think it really came to a head. I thought in the playoffs a couple of years ago when they were on that kind of overachieving team against the Sixers, and he had that injury earlier in the year, that injury in Minnesota where you thought his, you know, his leg had broken, but it wasn't. It turned out it was a dislocation of the ankle. So he comes back and he actually kind of eases his way in. But in the playoffs, he gets a chance to play a lot more. And he was averaging, I think he averaged over 20 points a game in that series. And, you know, D'Angelo Russell had been the face of the team. And then all of a sudden Karras came back and D'Angelo was kind of taken out of that series. And Karras emerged as the guy in a big spot, in a pressure situation that led the team and was the guy that was hard to guard. And I think that really increased his worth and his, the excitement level that Net fans had. And then last year, I thought the other part of his career trajectory was in the bubble when all the Nets firepower, you know, either had COVID or sat out of the bubble, and he was the star. And he was the focal point. Everything revolved around Karras. He was the primary ball handler. He was the scorer. He was the leader. And he was fantastic in Orlando last year in the restart. The Nets beat a couple of teams that, you know, people think they beat the Clippers. They beat the Bucks. You know, they almost beat Toronto in the first game of their playoff series. And it was because it was Karras and a lot of role players. You know, Karras and Jared Allen and Joe Harris. But you know, he was the main guy, and you saw that he could be the main guy on a good team.
And I think it's his ceiling that has a lot of Pacers fans excited. I think the more diehard NBA fan you talk to, the more impressed they are with a trade that the Pacers were about to make, the player that the Pacers hopefully will be getting on the court soon. And of course, is the medical side to this is what's most important. But JJ and I talked about this last week on the podcast. There's only so many guys in the NBA that are even capable of 50-point games or capable of multiple 40-point games. His injuries has been a cause of this. Obviously, this year the Nets have had stars where he maybe can't get the spotlight that a player in his position would like to have. But if everything can come together with his injuries and the fit in Indiana, where's his ceiling?
You know, you mentioned that 50-point game, and I remember that game in Boston last year because I think he had like 37 after the third quarter, you know, between the fourth quarter and overtime. I mean, he was just unbelievable. We've seen that from him when that was without Kyrie and without KD, and the same thing you saw in the bubble. When he came back this year, he had trouble figuring out kind of where he belonged. I mean, he basically, at this point in his career, he's a point guard who can score. I mean, that's where he's best fit, not standing off on the wing. He's best with the ball in his hands. And if you're going to load up on him, he's a really terrific playmaker. And if you don't load up on him, he will take you off the dribble. He can get into the paint anywhere he wants. And he's become a pretty good, you know, pull-up three-point shooter. The other thing about Karras, he's just got this herky-jerky game about him that makes him so hard to guard. You know, he wiggles his way into the paint. I used to say he's like a spill. You know, he finds the cracks and gets to where he wants to go, gets to his spot. He'll stop and start. You know, he can stop. He can go really fast into the lane and then put on the breaks like it's an emergency break and pull up. You know, the ball comes out in different angles, which always makes it hard for shot blockers and the guy. So that's what makes him so hard to guard in the interior, in the paint, because you can hit those little floaters and pull-ups and fadeaways. So that's going to be something that's so fun for you guys to watch with Karras every night. And he's long, you know, so he's tall and he's long arms, and On defense, he can be disruptive. He can steal the ball. Now, he's not a lockdown defender, but he's a good defender, and he can be disruptive. So, you know, wherever that can take you is what his ceiling is. I think he just gets better and better. He's got all these quirks. His whole thing has always just been, you know, he's snake bit with injuries and things going on in his life. And you know, from that standpoint, it's just it's unfortunate. You feel so badly for him at times. But knowing he can get through them and he can respond to those things, if he can stay healthy, man, he's really, I think he can be an all-star player. I think that's his ceiling. Well, can he be, is he a superstar first team All-NBA guy? I don't know. I wouldn't put it past him. But, you know, all-star, yeah, I think that's a doable kind of thing.
Jeremiah and I talked about this as well, but in terms of his fit within the Pacers and the type of player he is, you're describing somebody that's so unique. For those that didn't get the chance to watch him as much as you do, is there any sort of player comparison that you've seen around the NBA to the style of player that Caris LeVert is?
It's hard to comp Caris because he does have such a unique game and he does so many things. It's funny because we were watching him the other day in his tie-dye net blue, you know, throwbacks that they were wearing from the early 90s, and he had a white headband on, and from behind, when I described him, I said, he looks like Kenny Anderson in that headband, you know, the former net great and Celtic player, where just his ability to kind of get into the paint and stop and go quickly and, you know, just dart and dash. You know, he's got a little, I'm trying to think of, you know, guys, again, like I described, his ability to get anywhere he wants on the floor, is, you know, get into the paint, sort of weave his way into the paint is a little like Harden. You know how Harden can kind of always figure out how to get to his left and get in there, or Manu Ginobili used to be able to kind of do that, get it, slither their way into the paint. And then the ball coming out at all different angles is reminiscent of those guys too, or Tony Parker with his floater kind of thing. All great, you know, guys you want to be compared with in this league.
Chris wanted to wrap up on maybe a big picture thought. Kevin Pritchard said something over the weekend that I kind of found interesting. And he said, you know, at least from a Pacers perspective, you're not always going to be able to get the best player on the planet. And we know some markets are able to do that. But his goal is to get as many really good players as he can and to fill the roster up with those kind of guys and then see what happens. What is your outside view as you look in on what the Pacers are trying to do? And this is assuming health, obviously. I mean, TJ Warren, if he comes back by the end of this season and Caris LeVert comes back to full health and maybe even projecting out to next season, because I think the Pacers window is not really, you know, how can they be at their best this playoff run, but maybe even next season. But the way the Pacers are trying to build to compete against a team like the Nets, who does have a couple of the best players on the planet.
No, and I remember a time when, you know, Indiana was one of the best teams in the league and one of the best teams in the East. I mean, it's possible to do there. It's not like you can't do that. And especially now, the way the league is with guys and how the world has become smaller and the country's become smaller with social media and things like that, where you don't have to be in a major market to take advantage of marketing opportunities. I mean, you know, Dame Lillard's doing fine in Portland. So you have situations like that where I think with every team, you want to get young players that you control. You know, Caris LeVert's on an affordable contract right now, and you control that. So you want to be able to build it up, and then if it's good, you'll attract other stars. You know, maybe not the Kevin Durants of the world, but there are other guys that you can pull in. And so that's what you have to do. And I think to be able to sort of swap out an Oladipo who came in a trade and blossomed there in Indiana, but he didn't come on his own merits. And, you know, you have to, you know, his contract was coming up. You didn't know if you were going to be able to keep him in Indiana. So to trade him for a guy that I think has the same kind of upside as Oladipo, and you have control over him now for a few years, that's what you've got to do. And you got to be smart. You know, the other thing that teams that are successful right now have done, And this is what the Nets did in developing a LeVert and a Jared Allen, is you've got to take those late first rounders, those second round picks, those G League guys, see Spencer Dinwiddie, and develop them into either guys that will help you become that young upcoming team that free agents want to join, like the Nets were, or move them to get assets. I mean, look what the Nets did. I mean, they took players that were late first rounders, G League guys. They developed these assets and then turned them into star players. So, you know, that's the bird's eye view. That's what you've got to do when you're in Indiana. And I think LeVert is a terrific guy. Miles Turner is another guy that, you know, you'd be able to do that. Create an identity there. And then people will want to be a part of that.
Chris, I really appreciate you joining us. For those listening, maybe, you know, a lot of the Pacer fans don't get to listen to you on the radio, but I do think if they close their eyes, they can envision you calling NCAA tournament games. And that's one of the, always in March, I love getting in the car, especially when you're calling a game. It just kind of feels right. And we didn't get to have that, you know, in 2020. Who knows what happens with the tournament coming to Indiana? Yeah. Have you had any discussions about it?
Well, last year was funny because I was so, I was getting ready for the NCAA tournament when it all shut down, and we were on a West Coast trip with the Nets. And I was all, you know, planning out my strategy, because it's really hard to get ready for that. You know, I do the four games in one day on either the Thursday or Friday, and we were going to be out west, and I was going to be red-eyeing home on a Monday to come home and then go right up to Albany the next day to do the NCAA tournament. So I was already planning out my strategy of having games downloaded on my iPad so I can work on the ride on the flight home and all these things. And, you know, you worry and you plan, and then things don't happen. So it's so funny because the tournament is always it's the hardest thing I'll do all year. And it's one of the most fun things I'll do all year. So it's going to all be in Indiana. I'm not sure what's going to happen because we've got all these, COVID protocols, and I go through a lot of testing with the Nets, and I don't know how long if I'd have to be out in Indiana for a longer period of time. And, so I'm not really sure what's going to happen yet, but hopefully, you know, if it all can work out, I would love to be there in Indianapolis for what's going to be an amazing, you know, tournament to have all, whatever, 68 teams there in Indy. But I know one thing, if there's one city that can do it, it's Indianapolis.
And we thank Nets broadcaster Chris Carino for joining us here on the Sideline Guys. Now transitioning to part two of today's podcast.
Well, one of our New Year's resolutions for the Sideline Guys podcast was to expand our horizons a bit, to bring on more guests. I know JJ and I have been on the same page there. And this next guest gives us the opportunity to accomplish both of those. We are joined now by a local Indianapolis artist who's now in Los Angeles, Kid Quill, who's also a diehard Pacers fan. So first and foremost, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here, both from your music background and your Pacers fandom background. You probably know this podcast that we do is catered to the diehard Pacers fan. So you fit in perfectly in that regard. I know, at least for you, two of your biggest passions, music and the Pacers, have kind of come together to form who you are and what you do.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me. I mean, I've been a fan forever. You know, I've watched you on TV, Jeremiah, forever. So it's good to be here and good to chat with you guys.
Awesome. Yeah.
You know, as I was thinking about how this interview might unfold, you know, I initially thought, let's get into your music background. Let's roll in some Pacers coverage. But as you know very well, one of the great things about sports is it's unpredictable. And since we scheduled this interview to right now, the Pacers have made a pretty big move, moving Victor Oladipo
pretty to big.
Houston, Caris LeVert to Indianapolis. I'm wondering your thoughts on all of this and this trade that just went down.
Well, it's tough to see VO go, you know. I remember sitting there in the living room with my dad, just, you know, hitting the fist bump and the downward motion, like, this is my court. But, you know, as long as he's happy, and I actually am a really, really big fan of Caris LeVert. I was a fan of Caris LeVert years ago when he was at the Nets. And I'm actually very proud to be a Pacers fan, that the way we handled the last, I guess, week. So I'm stoked.
Why don't you give those listening an idea? Because I at least have gotten a picture in my head from some of those that work with the Pacers. But when you're in concert and on tour, I know you make it a pretty big point to make sure you've got the Pacers on wherever you are.
Yeah, and even they hooked me up with a Kid Quill jersey when I played my first headline show in Indianapolis this past fall in 2019. But I rep it all the time. Even in my first TikTok, we just started using TikTok because, you know, it's kind of what you got to do now. And in my first, you know, in one of my TikToks, I was wearing a Pacers, you know, Pacers logo, and I have a Pacers jersey hanging up right here in my house. And it's just natural to me. You know, I have rocked the Pacers gear since I was a kid. There's like pictures of, we were trying to find old pictures of me and my dad going to games, but I don't even think cameras were allowed in the games when we were going. I don't think you could bring the cameras in. So yeah, it's just been natural, and it's fun that my worlds have kind of collided here, and you know, get to sit here and chat with you guys and rep.
I was just gonna say, for Pat and I both, this has been kind of, you know, dream come true kind of jobs, because we think about going to the games as kids and cheering for the team, and now working for the team. And it has to be similar for you that you're partnering with the team now and some projects coming up. Maybe did you have any kind of pinch me moments that hey, I've arrived, I'm doing this with the Pacers now?
Yeah, no, there was a funny time. We had a Zoom call, right? And they, you know, the team wanted to do it at 9 a.m. Eastern. And for us, that's 6 a.m. And it was one of those things where it was like, it doesn't even matter. We could do it at 8 a.m. Eastern and I'm waking up, you know, no matter what time. And that, but I think that first initial Zoom call where it was like, oh, this is really happening, it was like, I will wake up for this meeting at 4 a.m. if I have to, you know, you can call me in the middle of the night. So
before we get any further, maybe explain some of the things that you have planned and that you are doing, and how the fans that are Pacer fans and soon to be Kid Quill fans will be able to see your work.
Sure. Yeah. We're just, you know, trying to come up with creative ways to kind of work together and kind of just highlight, you know, Indianapolis is a really cool place to be from. And, you know, we just kind of want to start connecting those dots between music and, you know, culture and all these different things that Indy has to offer. And I feel like this is just kind of the initial building blocks, is just trying to figure out how we can creatively start to highlight some of these awesome things that, you know, Indianapolis has going on.
I'm sure our podcast listeners very much agree that when you have the opportunity to have somebody of notoriety that's from Indianapolis, that's from the state, they love when they take pride in that, like you do and you have. I'm wondering if you can just kind of fill in, give us some background. I mean, how you got started in music and, you know, reading your Wikipedia page before this, it talks about some rap battles that you had in your basement maybe growing up. Is that, yeah. Is that kind of where a lot of this starts?
Yeah, no, so I grew up in Shelbyville, southeast side, you know, 25 minutes from downtown, 30 minutes from downtown. And we had this hat. It was a North Carolina Tar Heels hat for some reason. And whenever you had the hat on, you had to rap. And it always got passed to me. And so it just kind of became this joke. And when I got to college, I was playing soccer in college, and I kind of got burnt out. And I kind of wanted to find a new passion. And I was always passionate about music. I was a fan of music. You know, I was burning CDs. I was showing my friends. I was rapid fire. Always what's new on the internet. And so that's kind of how it all started. And I got some shows and we started playing some shows. When I graduated, I put out my first project. And the rest has just kind of been, you know, gradually building block by building block. And being from Indiana, I feel like, you know, speaking for myself at least, I have a chip on my shoulder. I feel like we all have chips on our shoulders, being from, you know, what they call us as the flyover state. So it's just like, I just want to keep changing people's lives with music and continue to be a positive influence with the music. And so all a work in progress, but I appreciated the notoriety thing. That kind of gassed me up. I appreciate that.
Well, when you think about your music career, and it's still so young, but I'm sure it's been something that in a lot of ways you've been preparing for your whole life. Yet, was there a moment that something hit you where, you know, wow, a lot of what I've been working for, these goals are starting to be accomplished. You know, I'm starting to actually, all of these dreams are starting to turn into a reality.
Absolutely. There's a few I can, like, when we played, I played Firefly, and I also played Lollapalooza the summer of 2019, two kind of major festivals. And I was on early in the day at Firefly, and we didn't know what to expect. It's in Delaware. And, you know, my booking agent was there for the first time to see a show and kind of meet each other. And 400 to 500 kids ended up showing up early just to kind of hear me do what I do. And that was like a moment where it was like, oh, man, this is kind of getting real. And over the weekend, we just put out some new music for the first time in a year and a half. Didn't know what to expect. It was just kind of like, you know, let's just get back into it. And over the long weekend, it already has 150,000 streams on Spotify alone. So it's just kind of like that was one of those things where it was like, man, I spent a year and a half kind of working towards a goal, and all of a sudden we put it out and it's just kind of doing what we thought it would do. And it's just one of those things where it's like, pinch me, is this real? You know, it makes it feel a little bit more worth it. So
Pat mentioned the Wikipedia page. I have to admit, I also checked that out, and there's a lot of talk about your soccer career. So yeah, maybe tell us about the athlete, Kid Quill. What kind of soccer player were you? What'd you specialize in?
Hey, I was a center defensive mid. You know, I wasn't the type that was going to, you know, turn around and take you on. You know, I was going to make the right play. I wasn't going to get beat. I wasn't going to get beat defensively. But I also played basketball in high school. But I quit sophomore year to kind of focus on soccer because I was much better. I was that dude that was just like, you know what? If I'm open, pass it to me. I got a nice little jumper on me. You know, little corner three specialist.
Exactly.
Everybody's got a jumper. I had that nice little corner jumper. Just pass it to me. I'm there, you know, spread the floor. But no, and actually playing soccer in college and music, they're actually pretty synonymous with the feeling that you get of like when you're going on stage. That feeling that you have before tip off or before kickoff or whatever sport it is, they're kind of the same feeling. It's kind of just like you're not nervous, but you're kind of excited, you know? It's like, let's go do this. It's not like, oh, I'm stage fright, you know? So it actually helped a lot.
For anybody listening, you know, that's kind of, I always enjoyed, you know, the last 7 years when we could travel, you know, on the plane and be in the hotel. I felt like I'm part of a team again. And then when the pregame show starts, it is that feeling kind of in the locker room before a game. And so, you know, playing soccer at DePauw and what you did growing up, I guess I wonder how that sports background has helped your career.
It definitely has, because I was thinking of other moments that were, I mean, maybe the biggest pinch me moment was when I did my first full headline out at the Deluxe, you know, 750 kids in there. And I was so nervous before the show that it was like trying not to, you know, throw up type, you know. What's that Eminem song? Mom, throw up on a sweat already, Ma spaghetti. It was like that type of nervous. And I kind of just channeled, you know, soccer, you know. I've played in big games, and it was just, you know, nothing is different. You're on tour. You know, this is the same. You're going out, and you're it might feel different in the room, but you have a job to do. Just like sports, you have a job to do when you get out there. And I just kind of channeled that and let it rock.
You're a couple of years younger than I am, but we're both, for lack of a better phrase, or maybe this is the best phrase you could use, we're both 90s kids, and we had the great benefit of getting to grow up.
I'm jealous.
With those Reggie Miller Pacers teams and those early 2000s Pacers teams. And of course, I'm sort of leading you in here to talk about your music as well, but how much influence did that have on you know, you growing up, and then ultimately in your music, which you just, of course, have the song out titled 90s Kids just a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm. I'm a big sucker for nostalgic stuff, man. I like really enjoy nostalgia. I like to think about the good old days, even though, you know, arguably I'm living in them right now. I'm in my mid-20s and I'm doing what I love. So, but no, the the 90s were great. I mean, it was just one of those things where I remember, it's actually the year 2000, but I remember watching the Pacers when we made it to the finals against, you know, Shaq and Kobe. And I was sitting there in the living room with my dad, and, you know, I had my Game Boy Advance, and in between commercial breaks, I was going back to Pokemon and then coming back up, and, you know, it wasn't fun to watch Kobe and Shaq, but at that time for me, I was like, man, screw these guys. But no, those Pacers days were awesome. You know, those were very fond memories. But no, growing up in the 90s and kind of even in the 2000s, I feel like my generation, you know, we were very unique because when I was growing up, I didn't have a phone. You know, I didn't have a phone till I was in high school. We were still riding bikes and we were still doing this. But then when we got to high school, everybody had cell phones and everybody was calling each other. I feel like we got the best of both worlds. And I just try to kind of channel that in my music.
I'm with you. I don't think I got a cell phone until I was a sophomore. And then my younger brother got one in like sixth grade. And I think I still hold some animosity from that. It's been like 15 years, but
sure.
I think I still hold some animosity toward some of that. You know, you talked about your Pacers fandom and how you always have the game on. You've been to, you know, a ton of games. You've got the jersey, but you also partnered recently with Tamika Catchings of the Indiana Fever and helped raise money for her. Why was that important to you? Why was working with her important to you?
I just felt like at the time, you know, this was in June. I felt like I really needed to do something. It was kind of the feeling of I could go on the internet and I have a following on the internet and I can say something. But at that point, what can I say that hasn't already been said? You know, I felt like I needed to do something. And I had an old Mazda 6 I used to drive, and I had name dropped it a couple times, and I knew I was making the move out here, and that car was not going to be able to make that drive. So I just kind of, I auctioned it up to fans, and it ended up going for, you know, $10,000 from to a collector bought it. And I thought, what better organization to give it to than Tamika's? Because I feel like she's really tapped in, and she really makes a difference in the city, you know? So I was happy to be a part of it, and I was happy to kind of get that to her.
So this just kind of out of the blue, hey, you know, you knew Tamika's Foundation did good work, and you just kind of had that in you.
Absolutely. I think what it was I saw that she commissioned an artist to paint one of the Black Lives Matter murals. And I was like, oh, that looks sweet. I was like, that's awesome. And I was like, I want to get involved. And then it was, how do we get involved and how do we do this? And shout out to my team for just kind of making it happen. They just kind of took on the project for me. I just had the initial idea. So credit to them.
So we hear that you had, you know, the phone started in high school, but now TikTok's a big thing. So the Sideline Guys, full disclosure, Sideline Guys are not big on TikTok. But I've got a sixth grader that is, so I'm trying to learn. But do you have any advice for us, how we can kind of get through to that generation, and how are you doing that so well?
Sure. It was one of those things where it is really hard for me. Like, it truly, like, it might look simple on my page, but man, there's TikToks where I've spent more time working on a TikTok sometimes than a song. Like, it just doesn't come natural to me, you know? So I think the biggest thing for us was we were just like, all right, you know, where do we start? Let's just start watching TikTok, you know? Let's just engulf ourselves in this social media, learn what's cool, learn what the do's and not to do's. And we just kind of jumped off both feet head first. It's funny, the first, you know, we tried several different things. And then the first TikTok that went viral for us was my creative director was just like, hey, you should literally just rap in front of your microphone. Maybe, you know, I think people like when you rap. And I just did that and we uploaded it. And then my parents were visiting out here for the first time and we were eating Mexican food. And I was like, yo, something's happening on TikTok. And I was like, this video has like 500,000 plays in an hour. This is kind of crazy, but yeah, we just kind of jumped off head first, and I don't even know if there's a right or wrong way to get into it other than just to get into it.
It was your turn to wear the North Carolina hat, right? You just
exactly. Exactly. I should have just put the North Carolina hat on it. I should go and get a North Carolina hat next time.
Well, let's change it. Let's maybe make it a new thing. You put on a Pacer hat, you start rapping, and then, you know, maybe that's how we get ours going.
Hey,
this is like a brainstorming session.
Hey, I was going to say, man, I am more than happy to run with that idea. Put on the hat, spit a couple bars, watch the views go crazy, baby.
You know, not to digress too much here, but freestyle rapping has always been so fascinating to me because so much of what Jeremiah and I do is top of mind. It's not scripted. Our reports are, you know, we have the information in our head and it's our job to convey them to the listener, to the viewer, without reading off a piece of paper. Yet, man, you put me in any sort of freestyle rap, anything. And I've tried this and like I am face, you know, egg on face, on the floor, an embarrassment.
Sure.
When did you realize you were so good at this? And because I would think that even if I have no musical ability, that these two would have at least some crossover. For me, there's absolutely none. When did you realize you were good at this?
Well, I'd say good with an asterisk, because I'm kind of, my creative process is when I get a beat or we kind of flesh an idea out, I will sit down with it and I kind of freestyle in a way. I do melodies more so than I do words. Like, I'll really just try to come up with, you know, cadences and pockets, and then I'll go back and I'll try to figure out the words. But freestyle wise, if I just had to freestyle right now, I would just say like just dumb stuff.
Yeah. Well, at least we're on the same page there.
Yeah. I would love to hear your rap, Jeremiah. I don't know where he went, but
he's still there.
That would be hilarious. That would be so funny.
Maybe just do a sideline report that has a little bit of a speed to it. The problem
absolutely
is I'm not sure
go viral.
I don't know how Quinn would react to that on the toss bag. I'm not sure.
That seems to me like one of those high risk, low reward type of ventures.
Hey, man, that would absolutely go viral. Especially with the hat on. I'm just saying. Yeah,
exactly. I guess I wanted to ask a rap question then. You know, there's been some Pacers over the years that have had musical interests. You know, Vic, I know, not necessarily a rapper, but was into music. Yeah. And Lance Stephenson, I think he had a little bit of music, if I recall. Is there some Pacer?
Lance would like to dance,
share
the baby.
Stage? Yeah. Is there a Pacer you'd like to have past or present to share the stage with?
I would absolutely, absolutely love any type of sound clip from Lance. It don't even matter what he wants to do. We will find a way to make it work. You know, that's a legend right there.
I think there's some potential here, Pat, don't you think? Because, I mean, I know he's trying to get back on the court, but he probably has some time on his hands.
He probably does. He would also be the type of guy that would probably be interested in doing this. Like, you never know. Some guys, they want, they're interested, but like on their terms, in their time, more than understandable while they've got an NBA career going on, and everything is under, you know, kind of their jurisdiction. He seems like the kind of guy that's like, I don't know, set me up with a Zoom call right now and we'll do it.
Yeah. Hey, Lance, if you hear this, man, let's get it going.
If Lance hears this, it means our reach has really grown in the past year or so. But that would be fantastic. Maybe because you're on this, you will help us get there.
Yes,
absolutely.
Before we I want to get your thoughts on the Pacers season. You know, we are, as recording this, 13 games in. As you know, these are the diehards that are listening to this. So give you a chance to put on the basketball analyst cap for a moment. What are your thoughts on where the Pacers stand and the rest of the year?
It's an easy phrase. Da-da-da, da-da-da. We're coming for it all, baby. You're going to see us on ESPN SportsCenter. I'm saying, if we get healthy, I really felt like at the beginning of the season, if we could get healthy, we could make a run. And I still feel that way. So I got my fingers crossed.
before we let you go, we know you're going to have the games on TV in the background of your shows, and I hope you know, everything with COVID comes around to the point where you know, you can get into back in, into doing a lot more of that. But why don't you take an opportunity now that the fans have gotten to know you a little bit to tell them where they can follow you, where they can listen to you, maybe where they can catch those viral TikToks, TikToks given to us all.
Sure. So Kid Quill, Q-U-I-L-L, is where everything is. And it's just across Instagram, Twitter, just Kid Quill. Any type of streaming service you use, whether it's Spotify, Apple, you know. My TikTok, though, is Kid Quill 317 because someone took Kid Quill from me. You know, I was too late to the game. By the time I was on there, someone already took my username. So, but yeah, I'm happy I got to chat with you guys, man. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Maybe this is already part of your thought process, but I'll leave you with this. You know, think about when I was growing up, I was an 80s kid, not a 90s kid like y'all.
Remix. That's what it is. Shuffle. We need the remix from you.
Exactly. The Super Bowl Shuffle, you know, a team goes on a run, you create some kind of a song, and everyone remembers it. I remember the Reds World Championship song in 1990. So you got to start planning now the Pacer playoff run song, right?
Oh, man. As soon as we hang up, I'm going to load up the beat we have, and I'm going to get going.
Okay.
And I'm going to manifest it. I'm going to manifest it.
I'll sing that on a sideline report. How about that?
That's a deal. Okay. A lot of things have to happen to get there, but we're doing it. We're manifesting it now. Love it.
You know, when we have these top of mind discussions, it kind of hits me that I should ask you something that I probably should have asked you right off the top. But I can imagine many people wondering while they're near the end of this podcast, and I don't want them to feel unfulfilled. How did you come up with the name Kid Quill?
So, if you can imagine the, how old was I? 18-year-old kid with the North Carolina hat on. He thought Kid Quill was cool. That's kind of where it started. But as I've grown up, Quill is from my middle name, which is Quillen. And then the kid just stands for keep it dope, which just means, you know, be just a good person and just kind of shine some light and, you know, just pay it forward, I guess.
See, that's really fitting then, because I was going to ask, and you are far from the first musician to have Kid in their name, and some continue to have it in their name as they get older. But I was going to ask, you know, do you have to consider dropping the Kid at any point? But it seems like you found a way to keep that going long beyond whenever. You can still call yourself a kid. You're in that gray area, but you found a way to make that work for you long term, it sounds like.
And I think at the end of the day, there's a kid in all of us, man. We're all just kids at heart. You know, the things that we find enjoyable in our lives, I think, make us feel like kids again. So I just try to kind of bring that energy in my music.
I think I'm going to start calling you Kid Boylan.
I'll take that. Yeah. Let's go. Right. Yeah. Hey, man, that's kind of a nice new nickname for you. It kind of has a ring to it, Pat.
Like, yeah. Boylan, yeah. Yeah, like it kind of does. It kind of does.
He's always keeping it dope, too.
Well, see, like, Jeremiah's got the easy nickname, JJ. I don't really have an easy nickname, so we'll see. We'll try it on.
PB?
Yeah.
I just realized you guys are PB and JJ.
Yes, yeah. That was a runner-up name for our podcast. That
was it?
Yeah.
Nice.
But like, really, like Sideline Guys won the race while Peanut PB and J was like, you know, only halfway through the course. It was a far back runner up.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's kind of like maybe the Sideline Guys is the right decision, but you know, PB and J was just close to your hearts.
There are far too many jokes that you could make about it that are fairly unflattering that I think Sideline Guys were.
But the logo potential was there. I mean, you just put a sandwich and you got I'm the jelly, you know, it's awesome. But,
and what's more classic than PB and J?
Yeah.
I mean, what's more classic?
True. That's true. Hey, Mitch Kid Quill, we appreciate you joining us here. Love to hear your Pacers perspective, your fandom. You represent the city so well, and it's great to see you taking your talents to Los Angeles. Great to talk with you. Appreciate the time. Best of luck.
Appreciate you guys. You guys be safe.
All right.